Well, welcome to the third week of our series called Miracles at Midnight. Christmas is all about miracles. It's also a season marked by light. And the greatest Christmas miracle of all time, was when God's light broke into our world, shining through the darkness and the gloom. In Advent, the 4 weeks before Christmas, we wait for that light to come again, reminding ourselves that God does his best work in the dark. Long before dawn breaks, he's setting things up, getting things ready for his light to suddenly break through into our lives again, just as he did 2,000 years ago when Christ was born at the midnight hour. King Herod didn't know anything about it. The religious leaders, the people, they didn't realize what was going on. They were still walking in darkness, a land filled with gloom. But soon, dawn would break. Salvation would come. God would have the victory on that Christmas morning. 2 weeks ago in this series, we talked about how important it is to keep moving forward, even when you're in the darkness. When you live like morning has already come, like the dawn has already arrived, soon your inflection point, that moment when everything begins to turn around for the better, will come. Last week, John the Baptist appeared in the desert, challenging all of us to make more space for God's grace, clearing out the clutter of anger, bitterness, distraction, judgment, unhealthy activities, resentments, and grudges, changing our lives to make room for the light to come. Today I want to talk with you about look for the light. Years ago when I was in the seminary, I was assigned to a parish in the Outer Sunset District of San Francisco, you know, where all that fog is. And I was on something called a pastoral year. Somewhere in the middle of your studies, after the second or the third year, you'd step away from the classroom, leave the seminary grounds, and go live at a parish for about 9 months, learning from the pastor and getting to know the people. It was kind of like a test drive to see whether parish life was the right fit. When I was there, one afternoon, a staff member called me, and he asked me to come down to the church as soon as possible. The pastor was away, and there was a problem. It's my first test. And when I arrived, he led me up to the altar, to the candle banks on either side of the altar. You know those candle banks where people light those small votive candles as a symbol of their prayers. The problem was, all those candles were out. None of them were lit. The entire church was in darkness. It was very, very unusual. Usually all those candles would be lit, but not now. The staff member pointed to a woman standing off to the side, and he said, "Roger, this woman came in and just blew out all the candles." I thought, "Are you kidding me? People paid good money for those candles to light those candles." So I walked over to her and I said, "Ma'am, why did you do that?" And she looked at me with all seriousness and said, "God told me to." I said, "No, ma'am, God didn't tell you to do that. God wants the light to shine." Well, she kept insisting, and I kept explaining to her why it wasn't right to do that, but she wasn't listening. Nothing got through. So finally I said, very politely, "Ma'am, unless you want the blue lights of a police car to be shining through our stained glass windows here in a few minutes, you best leave and not come back, unfortunately." And she followed my advice. I think of that because I wonder whether someone or something has ever blown out the light in your life. Your prayers haven't been answered. The situation hasn't changed. The healing hasn't come. That loved one isn't back in church. Your marriage still feels stuck. Your finances still strained. Your heart still heavy. Can I encourage you? No matter what's happening, don't let anyone or anything snuff out the light burning inside of you. Don't walk away in the dark. Always, always look for the light. In today's first reading, the prophet Isaiah was speaking to a people who were living through one of Israel's darkest chapters. under King David, they had been the envy of the world, a leading light for many other lands and peoples, but now it had been torn apart by civil war. And worse than that, the powerful empire of Assyria was sweeping through the ancient world like a tidal wave, crushing kingdoms, burning cities, leaving devastation behind everywhere it went. And now Israel was in the crosshairs. It was truly a midnight hour for God's chosen people. But once again, into that darkness, Isaiah spoke words of hope. He was relighting their candles, so to speak. He painted a picture of deserts suddenly bursting into bloom, weak hands made strong, fearful hearts made brave, the blind seeing again, the lame walking again, captives returning home with joy. He said, strengthen the hands that are feeble, make firm the knees that are weak, say to those whose hearts are frightened, be strong, fear not. Here is your God. He comes with vindication, with divine recompense. He comes to save you. I love that quote. But Isaiah spoke those words long before anything had changed. Yet he knew the light was coming. Dawn was on the way. He was telling his discouraged, beleaguered people, don't give up. Keep going. Always keep looking for the light. Scientists tell us that the dawn of a new day actually comes in several stages. It's not like God just flips a switch and it's a new day. It slowly and steadily, the light begins to unfold. And the first stage of that is called astronomical dawn. The sun is about 18 degrees below the horizon. The light has just begun to bend over the curvature of the earth. But you can't perceive it yet. You look outside and it still looks like midnight. But mathematically, astronomically, scientifically, it's already a new day. God has already turned the world toward the light of his Son. This is where John the Baptist was in today's gospel, sitting in a dark prison cell, overwhelmed by doubt. John had told everyone Jesus was the Messiah, announced it publicly, even baptized him. But now John wasn't so sure. He wasn't so sure. Jesus had not turned out to be the Messiah he had expected. Instead of overthrowing the Romans like a powerful king, restoring Israel to its former glory, Jesus was going around healing the sick. Healing the sick and dining with sinners and talking about mercy and forgiveness. John sat in that prison cell alone, discouraged, worried, filled with doubt, awaiting execution. It was definitely his midnight hour. Years ago, I went on a police ride-along. You guys know what that is? When you actually go with the police in their patrol car for a shift, it's fascinating. A friend of mine was on the force in San Francisco, and it was a great experience. He worked a shift called the morning watch, which meant we were out all night until the sun came up the next day. One moment I remember in particular. It was about 4 a.m., astronomical dawn. It was pitch black outside, no hint of morning. But I saw all these people walking around on the streets of San Francisco. I wondered why. It didn't make sense because it didn't look like they were going anywhere in particular, you know, like to their cars or to the Muni or something like that. They just seemed to be wandering aimlessly on the streets in the dark. Well, I asked my friend what was going on. He said, oh, those are the insomniacs, the people that can't sleep at night. This happens every morning around this time. After tossing and turning until the wee hours, they would finally get up out of frustration and go for a walk. And I thought to myself, even before there's any light on the horizon, something inside told them to get up. Hope is coming. The dawn is on the way. Light is coming. That same feeling stirred inside John the Baptist, a feeling he couldn't put his finger on, a thought he really couldn't explain, but somewhere deep in that dark dungeon, John sensed the light was on the way. He couldn't see it. There was no evidence of it, but something in his heart told him he needed to do something. He needed to reach out. He needed to send a message. He needed to look for the light. The second stage of sunrise is called nautical dawn. That's when the sun is about 8 degrees below the horizon. There's a faint glow in the sky. You can just begin to make out the outline of objects way, way in the distance. Emotionally and spiritually, it's that moment when a verse of scripture suddenly hits you in a different way, in a very helpful way, like never before. Or a friend says the exact thing you needed to hear in that moment. A door cracks open. A prayer feels less empty, less forced. A spark of hope begins to rise on the inside with no logical explanation. You're not in the light yet, but you can begin to see the outline of where God might be at work. And sitting in the darkness, sitting with his doubt, John the Baptist kept thinking about the things he had heard that Jesus was doing. And the hope began to build in his heart, just enough hope to believe that maybe, maybe he had not gotten it wrong. Maybe things would work out in the end. The gospel says when John heard in prison of the works of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to Jesus with this question: are you the one who is to come, or should we look for another? And that's when the third stage of daybreak, what's known as civil dawn, flooded John's soul with light. Civil dawn is when the sunrise is moments away. The sky fills with light. Your confidence begins to return. Fear starts to lose its grip. Doubt slowly melts away. There's enough light to see the next step. You begin to feel more hope and closer to God. And when John's disciples came back, they told him what Jesus said. He said, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind regain their sight. The lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have the good news proclaimed to them." And instantly, John the Baptist recognized those words from Isaiah, the same words we heard in the first reading today, those words predicting exactly what the Messiah would do when he finally came. It was like a secret code. Jesus was saying to John, "Yes, I am he. I am the Messiah. Look no further." Just like those stages of dawn, God brings us out of darkness in stages, faithfully, gently, shining his light just enough to see the next step. And when you keep looking for that light, even when it's faint, God will lead you out of lack of confidence, uncertainty to confidence, from confusion to clarity, from doubt all the way to hope. One of the greatest midnight miracles of our modern time came in 1940 on the beaches of France during World War II. Hundreds of thousands of Allied soldiers were trapped on the beach, surrounded by enemy forces with no way to get out, nowhere to run. Military leaders said rescue was impossible. There was no port. The beaches were too shallow. There were too many troops. It would be a doomsday mission. But right there, in that midnight hour, God was already preparing for the light to come. It was faint at first, just like astronomical dawn. A few voices, a handful of officers whispering a daring thought. Maybe we could bring them home. Could there be a way? There was no guarantee, but at least they were looking for the light. And then something amazing happened. Ordinary people began to respond. Fishermen, doctors, teachers, teenagers, anyone who had a boat, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, took those small boats and headed into danger, sailing across the English Channel at night towards the shore of France. There was just enough light. Like sailors spotting the faint line of horizon at nautical dawn, hope began to take shape. They didn't know how it would all work out. They were playing it by ear, to say the least. But they knew they had to try. The horizon was still hard to see, but the light was growing, and they kept looking for it. And then came the miracle. Civil dawn. Light flooded the earth. And all those soldiers were rescued by ordinary people in those tiny boats, those vessels, bringing them back to safety in England, one by one by one. A whole army brought home by a miracle that grew silently, quietly, almost invisibly until the light blazed across the sky. Maybe some of you or someone you know is standing on your Dunkirk beach right now. That was called the miracle at Dunkirk. Maybe you're standing on that Dunkirk beach right now. It's dark as night. It's dark as night, and fear has filled your heart. Jesus is not angry with you. He's not disappointed in you. We all lose hope sometimes. Even when John the Baptist lost his confidence, Jesus affirmed him. He defended him to the crowds. He said, John wasn't weak. He's not like a reed swaying in the wind. No, he was strong, steady, steadfast, courageous. He wasn't dressed in fine clothes. He wasn't an imposter. John was the real deal. Jesus even went on to say this bold statement of, among those born of women, there has been none greater than John the Baptist. But here's the key. John never saw or even heard about or even dreamed about the resurrection. He had no idea. He had no idea. And that's why Jesus went on to say, yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John. It wasn't an insult. Jesus was saying, those who believe that he rose from the dead, those who believe that he rose from the dead can have even more hope. More hope than John the Baptist, more hope than all those prophets of old. That's you and that's me. And what we have to do is be patient. Like James says in the second reading today, make your hearts firm because the coming of the Lord is at hand. Even in your darkest hour, your faith will tell you hope is coming. Dawn is around the corner. The light is on the way. Your miracle is in motion. You just have to stay strong. Keep moving. Keep believing. Keep looking for the light. Always, always look for the light.